Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. I'm your host, Cindy Howes, and I'm here with my co-host, Lizzie No.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going great. At the time that people are going to be listening to this, I have recently announced, drumroll please, my new album.
What?
Havsies. Coming out January 19th on my label, Miss Freedom Land, in partnership with 30 Tigers.
That's amazing, Lizzie.
I did it.
Ugh. This is awesome news.
Eek.
What an exciting time to be alive.
I know. I have been waiting for this moment for a long time that I could talk about this on the pod.
Are there any songs that are out as of yet?
Yes. One song is out. It's called Lagunita. It's a rock Americana roots banger.
I will tell you that I have heard this song and a 13 out of 10.
Coming from a true radio professional and tastemaker like you, Cindy, it means a lot. No, but seriously, I feel like I've been, like, since I've known you, Cindy, I have been working on this album. And it's such a relief to, like, finally be able to, like, tell people about it and have them hear some of the songs. And it's just like you've been holding on to, like, a secret. And then you get to share it.
This is great.
Thank you, Cindy. I am so excited.
It's January 19th.
Yes, January 19th it comes out.
And it's called Havsies. What a great name.
Thank you. It's, like, whimsical, but it's also serious, just like me.
Right. Well, that's great. Mark your calendars January 19th for Lizzie's new album, and we, of course, will be covering it here on Basic Folk. Before we get into our guest today, we have the lovely Trey Burt on. I want to talk about our mailing list. If you're not on it, you can sign up. You can go to our website, basicfolk.com. There is a red sign up for the newsletter button. It's also linked in the show notes. You can also follow us on social media, Facebook or Instagram at Basic Folk Pod. We are, is it Scorpio season?
No, it's Libra season right now.
Okay. We are in Libra season, which is also overlapping with beanie season.
Yes.
You can get a handmade beanie from our website in the store, basicfolk.com. And if you give $5 a month, that supports the podcast. We are a listener-funded operation here. It helps keep the train on the tracks. And you can get a very cute beanie.
The beanies are really good, and the yarn is high quality. It's a nice it's a nice beanie.
It is a nice beanie.
That's a nice beanie.
And did you say beanie or bellini?
I think I accidentally said bellini.
Well, I will tell you, the person who makes these beanies does not enjoy a bellini. That's my mom. We went to Provincetown one time on vacation. It was so fun. And we went out to breakfast and I got a bellini.
What's a bellini?
It's like a mimosa style drink of like different juices. I think it's like orange juice and peach juice. Maybe?
Okay. I knew it was a cocktail of some kind.
All the bartenders listening right now are like, it's not that. I'm not a bartender.
We're not scared of you. We're not scared of bartenders. Come at us.
I said to my mom, this is such a beautiful drink. My mom doesn't like alcohol.
Okay.
But she held it in her hand and I took her picture and then she tried it and she was like, ew.
Ew.
handed it back to me. And that's my story about my mom and Bellinis. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Wait, we have more stuff to do. We have things to do.
Okay. All right, Trey Burt, let's do it.
Okay, yes. This week we have a basic folk hero returning to the pod. Yes, Trey Burt is back today talking with us track by track about his new album, Traffic Fiction. I have been listening to Trey Burt for many years. Well, as long as he's been releasing music. He's a friend of mine. And I have to say, this album is my favorite Trey Burt album yet. And here's why. It combines what's really special about his writing and the way he performs his songs as a vocalist with like a new awareness of his roots in soul and Motown. So it's a super fun, really like personal, deep album that kind of tricks you into going deep on your emotions through like extremely groovy songs. We talked through some of the super fun arrangements. Like, this is a more keys heavy album than Trey has done in the past, and we got into that. We talked about some of the field recordings that Trey made of his grandfather before he died that ended up getting included in the album. And those recordings are kind of the heart of what this record is about. It's about Trey, like, having that relationship with his grandfather that was filtered through the lens of soul music. And so he's telling these really personal stories about love and loss and remembering someone that was so important to him, but doing it in the most joyful way imaginable, which to me is what it is to be a great Black artist. We're always taking something sad and making it into something you can dance to.
And that's a promise.
That's a promise. That's what we do. That's what we're all about. We talked about his touring band. Trey has been has gained like a ton of fans for his sort of solo singer-songwriter bard vibe. But he's taken a band on the road for this record, and he wants people to dance to the album. We actually had a ton of laughs. I love episodes where I can talk to someone that is a longtime friend, because then I can tease them about personal shit and they can tease me right back. We talked about our celebrity birthday twins, life on the road. It's a really cool interview, and Trey is an important artist. I'm super grateful that he came on the show to talk about this album.
Me too. The new album Traffic Fiction is out now. It's been out for about a week, and we're going to take a listen to clips from the record throughout the interview. So sit back, relax, laugh along with us here. We'll get to Trey Burt on Basic Folk.
Trey Burt, welcome back,
Lizzie,
to Basic Folk.
Thank you.
I want our listeners to know that Trey is connecting from an exercise ball. Do you care to comment? What is the role of balance in your life as an artist?
It's crucial. It's more fundamental than I've ever realized. We could get into that a little bit more later. But
yeah, we can.
That's a good question.
We are going to go track by track through the new album, but I wanted to catch our listeners up on, like, you know, the past couple of years of your life. You've been touring heavily, promoting You Yeah You and playing all over the world, but you've also kind of dug in some roots in Nashville, yes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm firmly planted in Nashville now.
Do you think of yourself at this point as a Nashville artist? Like, what would that phrase mean to you, being a Nashville artist?
It's a good question. I don't know, two things at once, because on one side, I feel, you know, when I first got here, I was kind of like the newcomer. Not that I didn't feel like I belonged, it's just that there's such a deep history of music here, of songwriter music, that I was just kind of like sitting in the back wings and observing and learning for a long time. But now I feel very much a part of the music scene here. And it's cool to be a part of the music community that kind of shapes what the Nashville music scene is. So,
What have your peers and friends in Nashville taught you about, like, the work ethic of being an artist? What would you say like defines like the Nashville artist?
Songwriter-wise?
Yeah.
You know, not that I really struggle with this ever, but first things first is lose the ego. The sense of community here amongst songwriters is something like I've never seen before. And in order for that to function, I mean, you just gotta, you know, lose the ego and be there for one another. So what defines the Nashville music scene is largely the community.
That's beautiful. And it's beautiful to hear with photos of John Prine behind you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
That's
a couple
nice.
Of cool ones. Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about Traffic Fiction. It is so good. It's like, I think it's your finest work yet.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start with the title track. Traffic Fiction is like the album is a kind of piano and keys heavy album, and that sound is crafted by the phenomenal Peter Keys.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how you became familiar with Peter's work and what his rock and funk bona fides did for the spirit of Traffic Fiction?
I mean, to be honest, I met Peter in the studio. That was
cool.
He was my co-producer Drea's pick, and he knew him from.
I love Andrea.
Yeah, you know Andrea, but he knew him from you know, working with him a bunch, and that was my first time getting to work with him. But he's really cool. He's a really, you know, intuitive player, and so yeah, there's Peter played on one half, and then Joe played on the other.
Joe Shornikov.
And I feel like their sounds are pretty different. But that's what makes the, you know, the record pretty sound as dynamic as it does.
A mesh.
A mesh.
A mesh. Bringing me down. Forgot to turn the light on, baby. Forgot to turn the light on, baby. Forgot to turn the light on, baby. Forgot to turn the light on. Kids in the Yard is like a come out swinging track.
Mm-hmm.
And that line, I do what I want, reminds me of Steve Biko. Do you read Steve Biko, the South African writer? He has this collection called I Write What I Like, which is kind of about how Black people can get free by doing, you know, what is most urgent on our own minds instead of listening to someone else.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is a little bit of that Biko spirit on this record.
Absolutely.
And in the way that you're presenting it. So what's your relationship with freedom right now in this moment?
It's imperative, creatively speaking as well. Like, you know, being in Nashville with such a deep history in country and folk and Western music, you know, it's easy to feel for a person like me that you have to do that to fit in or whatever. I just had to be honest with myself from the jump that I got other sounds too. And
yeah,
I'd be lying to myself if I didn't write those songs that are in my head that aren't country Western songs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Kids in the Yard, yeah, I do what I want. That is kind of like a proclamation of freedom to myself. Forgot to turn the light on, baby. Standing on a telephone wire, you took a piece of me. There was a lot to blame. Screaming at the top of my lungs, you took a piece of me. It's such a crying shame.
Let's talk about Piece of Me, because this is, to me, a grown-up, complex relationship song. I think a lot of us can relate to that feeling of having like pieces of us taken away
mm-hmm.
and like removed in relationships Do you feel like singing about your life helps you get those pieces back? Or are there times when sharing of yourself feels like a continuing loss? Like, I know you've said in your previous Basic Folk interview, actually, that sometimes you have to judge, like, who you can be your full self with. So how are you seeing that relationship now between, like, guarding yourself and giving of yourself?
Mm-hmm. Sonically and also lyrically, I feel like, personally, this is what it feels like to me. With my previous records, that was more kind of, I had a guard in front of me from the rest of the world. And I was just, I guess, going to the inside world where I write those songs and taking that and just putting it on the outside. But there was still that wall. It's just putting it on the other side. This record, I'm kind of busting the wall open and showing people just, you know, who I am. That's what I feel like anyway. So, yeah. Was that the question?
That was the question.
Tight.
Is it scary to do that? Asking for a friend?
I guess, yeah, but it's a choice you make, like, when you're writing the song and you have the line in front of you. And there's always that line that you want to say, but you're like, no, I can't say that. That's a little too vulnerable. But this record was a lot of, fuck it, no, that's what I'm thinking. I'm
going to write that down.
So it comes down to that choice when you're writing the song to just go with that one that's too scary, if that feels too scary.
Screaming at the top of my lungs.
I feel like the song Win My Heart is almost too groovy for a folk audience. Speaking of, like, you know, not that your audience is entirely folk, but, like, we met each other, like, you know, touring in that folk and Americana scene.
Yeah.
And I just, as I was listening to that, I was like, this is going to ruffle some feathers. So, like, what has been the best part of this, like, rock and soul transition in your career? And what is the most challenging part of sharing that side of you with your audience?
Oh, nothing. I feel like I got something off my conscience, like a guilty, I cleansed my conscience by writing, like, yeah, you know, there was that sort of deliberation where I was like, man, is it okay that I'm writing a soul song? But that's such a deep, you know, part of my memory and my history and my id and ego. That it feels
like. Can you talk about that? Your history with soul music? Like, what are the early memories of it?
Yeah.
How did that, like, form who you are as a listener of music as well as an artist?
Yeah. Well, my pops, who's all up and down the record, he's in those little, rap bits. He was the person that kind of gave me an appreciation for soul music and Motown. You know, there's that Temptations movie that came out in the mid '90s. That, you know, we love. We watched that movie a lot together. But
I feel like that movie really built the black household.
Oh hell yeah!
In America, we're in the house that Temptations movie built.
Yeah, and you know, we that's all we listened to is the Temptations too. So listening to the music and then watching that movie built a powerful, you know, it forged a powerful bond in me at a young age. But no, soul music, large part of my childhood.
I'm glad that it's unveiling itself now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to get into Nashville through the Trojan horse of singer-songwriter stuff, and then you can really share
That's a good way to put it. The flower of soul. Exactly, yeah. It definitely felt like, you know, folk and country and blues music is, you know, my first love, I guess, on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely felt like I had to prove myself on just the guitar before I could get to this sound. Because I always wanted to do this sound, but I feel like, you know, it'd be too unfocused if, you know, I was just kind of all over the place right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
For people and also just mainly for me, like, I needed something to focus on before I could kind of, like, move on sonically. But you said it right, it's like a Trojan horse.
Every time I see somebody, I think it's, you know, I have to look and see if it's you.
Yeah, you never know when I'm going to pop by.
No. Okay, I want to talk about the recordings that you made of your grandfather, and, like, there are a couple included on the album.
Mm-hmm.
How was it for you going... you record all these conversations, but then you have to go through the archive and... narrow down, like, what's something that I want to share with the world?
Yeah.
What was that process like for you, going through those old recordings?
That's something I did frequently for, like, years, was every time I'd go visit my pops, I'd just, you know, I'd have a tape recorder and I'd just hit record. Like, for Under the Devil's Knee, when that song came out, there's a B-side that we might release sometime in the future. It's just a recording of me and my family talking about what that song means to us as black, as a black family. And, historic, you know, what goes into my pops' his history. You'll hear that at some point. But
yeah.
These recordings, you know, honestly, recording this record was kind of like a blackout. I don't really remember too much of it because in the middle of the sessions, I had to go to my pops' funeral and fly back the next day and finish the record. And, you know, the curtain of, you know, death was very thick through this whole thing. So I don't really remember too much. But the recordings are kind of came last. It was the day before. It was the last day of recording. Actually, we recorded the record. But it was the last day before I was going to turn it in for mastering. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just had this strong urge to put some of those recordings on the record. It felt like he was very much a part of the whole writing and recording process, so he was a part of the record. And it was a little difficult to go through it and, you know, kind of listen to those moments. But yeah, with those bits, I kind of I share with people exactly what I was going through. And they don't necessarily relate to the songs, but they relate to the, you know, period of time in which I wrote them and experienced those songs. So it starts off kind of, you know, with me and my aunt and my cousin deciding which record to put on for my pops, because at that point in late stage dementia, music was the only thing that made him feel comfortable. You know, Stevie Wonder, he loves this Louis Jordan record. That was amazing. I put that on and he started tapping his feet and dancing and saying all the words, which was amazing because he couldn't even, you know, form a sentence, but he'd start singing the song. It's beautiful to see. It was so deep in his bones, music. And then it kind of, you know, the next scene is me sneaking up on him, and he says this thing, which a person who doesn't really know what's happening would just sound like a cute thing some grandpa says, but he says, every time I, you know, see somebody, I think it's you.
Yeah.
It really just goes to show that, you know, the state of his dementia, it's two-sided, you know. Just doesn't know who anybody is anymore. And then the last bit is me showing him my debit card, which has my LLC name on it, B&B Maintenance, which is his janitorial company he had in the 80s. That he employed a lot of our family from South Carolina and Philly to, you know, and my dad. To work for that company, and I was showing him that little bit, and that's something he always loved, looking at my name, his you know, name on my card. But at that time, he didn't recognize the name. It's its own little story.
Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna listen back with that in mind. I really hope that, like, when I go, I have people around me to, you know, surround me with the songs and the things that make me feel good.
Yeah.
I think that's really a beautiful thing that you did for him.
Yeah. He did it the best way. You know, it was a beautiful exit scene. He completed life, you know, he died in his wife's arms in his own bed. So there's, you know, as far as exits go, that he perfected it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the good life.
Yeah. That's the, tap dance out.
But you're doing okay, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good.
Just tired.
I want to talk about your plans for taking this album on the road and tie it into the next track, All Things Right, which is a super fun song. Reminds me a little bit of like Spoon era indie rock. Mm-hmm. So are you taking a rock band on the road? What are you hoping that the live show is going to communicate about like Trey Burt, recording artist, right now?
Yeah. When we go on the road, you know how it is. Bands are expensive.
Yes.
But
speak on that.
Smart. Yeah. Bands are expensive. And it ain't Canada where you got all this government funding for, you know, for the arts. It's very difficult. But for some reason, I had in mind to write a band record. And this is very much a band record. So when I do go on the road, I'm going to bring a band with me. And we'll be experimenting for a couple years, you know, for the first year especially, trying to get it down. But I want to present these songs just like they heard on the record and maybe also a little different, too.
Yeah, I always like when a live band elevates the material and isn't just like trying to play the record exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I want it to be fun to watch. I want it to want people, you know, this is also like you can dance to this music too. So this sort of music I wrote specifically to get me more grounded in my body. So it's not very much, it's not as heady as the other records. It's kind of like a spell I was writing for myself to ground me and put me in my body again. Because I'm, you know, sometimes I float away.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a powerful comment, especially when I think about like the state of music journalism today. My number one gripe is just how people focus on lyrics nowadays. And I feel like audiences have been like kind of trained to do that, like try to like decode songs for Easter eggs and like lyrical storytelling stuff.
Yeah.
And this is a record that like cannot be interpreted that way. It has to be experienced like in the body. And so I think there is going to be something really powerful about taking a full band on the road. So people will be forced to like really feel the groove.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. And like, for, you know, I do try the lyrics. I always try, but,
of course.
So there's things in there for me that only me or my family will understand. Like you're talking about the next track, All Things Right.
Mm-hmm.
The chorus is all things right. Find you stranded in Promised Land.
Mm-hmm.
Promised Land is the ancestral community where my family's from in South Carolina.
Oh.
So it goes from that bit to All Things Right.
I didn't know you were a Carolina diasporic.
Oh yeah. Negro, just like me. Mm-hmm, since, you know, late 1700s. Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, you and me and Adia are going to have a little seance offline.
Oh, yeah,
offline.
Absolutely. Yeah, me and Adia, you know, we'd be having our little seances, barbecues, cookouts.
What's up, Adia?
Come through. Lizzie, no. Yeah. Yeah, come hang out with us.
We'll pitch a tent in Charleston and do some witchy shit in there.
Okay, I thought you were doing a reenactment or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, lyrically, this is so beautiful. When you say you try, to be a river is just a triumph to me.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, what in your mind makes a great love song? And how did that standard influence where you went with To Be a River?
What in my mind makes a great love song? That's a hard question. I don't know. It depends on different genres and different eras. Like in early 2000s R&B, you know, all that stuff's about being cheated on or, you know.
People were struggling.
Yeah, people were struggling back then. And then, like, you know, a country love song is just about, I don't know, would you say that, you know, a heartbreak song is a love song? Or
it can be, but it isn't always.
Yeah. Love songs aren't my, I don't know, I guess I haven't really done that before. I call them anti-love songs.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Yeah, but I feel like with this record, I got the closest I have to making a love song, if you want to try to call it that. But yeah, I was just being honest. I think that that was kind of like the, that was a mantra.
It's an anti-love song can also be an answer.
Uh-huh. And it's also just about like self-love too, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wrote the large part of the record, at least that song, next to a river. And rivers, for me, plays a pretty, you know, it's a powerful symbol. One time I had this DMT trip where these stone gods showed me this neon rainbow river. And I was like, what is that? And they said, you know what that is? And I was like, well, it had no start or ending. And I was like, where do I get in? And they're like, what's the point of it? And they're like, you just sit in the middle and you float. That's the point. There's no start or end. You just be. And I was like, okay. So I guess To Be a River is just being that thing that can be in a constant state of change with the love, you know, in a constant state of evolution of love.
That's what love is.
That's what love is, I think, right? Yeah.
We got there.
We did it.
Do you see how we got around to the answer?
Yeah, okay.
But you invented the answer. It was within you all along.
Your great coaching.
Talk about Told You Then, which is such a fun tune, and I want to know about how the pieces came together, because the way that I experience that song is like a talking blues or a blues poem over this of orchestration.
Yeah.
So what came first? What was the seed? How did you quilt these different art forms together?
I'm glad he said, I'm glad he brought that up, because, that first intro riff on Told You Then is inspired by the kind of riff in Junior Kimbrough's Meet Me in the City, you know, so there's an old blues to it, element of it, that I took, and then I kind of put through like a punk scope. I'm combining a couple genres, you know.
Yeah.
And then the lyrically, it's kind of vignettes of what I've been up to, just, some hard times, that my friend Lillian has been present for. So yeah, it's kind of just my chaotic state of mind that I've been in or was in. A vignette with just two friends being there for each other, I guess, through a dark time.
Yeah, that's interesting. The relationship is like the through line, like the guitar riff. That's super fun.
Yeah.
Now, what singers inspired you when you were working on this album? And I'm asking in reference to Wings for a Butterfly, which is a really soulful and exposed vocal. And I think it's like a, it feels like a listener of your music. It feels like a step towards something very soulful in your vocal performance. So where are you? Yeah. Who were you listening to? What inspired you? What were your goals with like the vocal performances here?
Okay. So I was listening to a lot of, you know, not for that song, but for the, how I wanted to sing on the louder songs, you know, I was listening to a lot of Sam Cooke live, his live album in Harlem. That, you know, it's unhinged. Like,
it's terrifying the way he sings sometimes, actually.
He's singing with this grit you've never heard him sing before.
Right.
So, you know, for the other songs, I was listening to a lot of Sam Cooke, but for Wings for a Butterfly, that's, you know, I was listening to a lot of Chicano, Motown, soul, like Sonny Ozuna from Sonny and the Sunliners. You know, I love the way his voice, I identify with his brand of soul because it's not super pretty and, you know, which I love that stuff, but my voice just don't sound like that. So if I'm going to do a soul song, I would identify with, like, you know, yes, more like Sam Cooke, Harlem era, or Sonny Ozuna from Sonny and the Sunliners. But yeah, it does have that Motown motif in there, which I really love about Motown music. Which is, you know, my wacky voice on it.
Can you explain what goes into choosing a song as a single and like what you are hoping that new audiences will get about your work based on hearing that song? Like, if that's their first introduction, what are you hoping they're going to think about you as an artist? And what are you hoping they're going to be curious about?
Isn't that, I mean, I kind of want to ask you that question first, because that's like the bane of our existence, right? Like picking which, what's the single? What does that mean? What does that mean to you?
I can only accept the need to choose singles if I make an agreement with myself that it doesn't matter to me. Like, I just make an album, and then I pretty much let other people decide what the singles are going to be.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what people are going to like on the radio. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Sorry if that's rude.
That's great.
It's just like, what do you think is going to make people curious enough to listen to your album?
Uh-huh. Exactly. I feel like I'm of that thought too. Because with this record, I don't know. Yeah, because it was hard to pick a single, because if we started off with something like Yo Face or something, I think people would be like, what, is Trey singing jazz now? Is he a lounge singer or something like that? Which was a thought. I did think about doing that for a second. But I think I picked Santiago, or we ended up picking Santiago as a single, because it doesn't sound too dissimilar from, you know, the old sound or whatever I was doing before. So it's kind of like a thread, and then I could lead you to these new spaces later, sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like a pressure to concede things to your audience? Or, like, is there a sense of, like, if it's too different, you might scare people off?
Yeah. It's not like a pressure, but it is like, it's like fishing, you know?
Yeah.
I want them to bite, and that's important to me. That much is. But that's about as far as it goes. I don't feel like a pressure to sound a certain way. I just want to first get their attention so they can, you know, ride with me. Honey, should I look good? Honey, should I look? Honey, should I look away? One for the money, two for the show.
Two for the Show is giving uncanny fun. And there's something about the groove and the arrangement and, of course, the tempo change, blah, 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 blah. I felt like invited into like a more, like a higher awareness or a more flowy place. So,
yeah.
And I've read the word psychedelic in connection with this album. So what does psychedelic mean to you in your music? How do you access that creative space when you need to?
I feel like I'm stuck in psychedelic mode all the time.
Yeah.
you know, it's just kind of the realm I exist on naturally. Mm-hmm. Life is always very psychedelic to me with no drugs. Just, it's weird. It's crazy, you know.
It's wild out there.
It's wild. So when, you know, lyrically, it's fun to try and describe that feeling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But two for the show is, you wouldn't think off the bat, I guess, of whether that it's a very political song, but it is kind of about the surveillance state that we exist in now.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, has the character of the Chinese, that Chinese balloon, surveillance mm-hmm. balloon that, you know, happened this, was that this year?
Everyone was very upset about that balloon.
Very upset, very confused.
They were like, up in
the,
arms,
the
up in arms.
What's going on with this thing?
They were a flutter on Twitter.
But, you know, it alludes to the, you know, the darker side of what these world governments are doing mm-hmm. on us, the guinea pigs, and just for information, for used for war, you know, nothing more, nothing less. So, Two for the Show is talking about the deity of that is the god of war. One for the money, two for the show, three in the morning. I don't even know my lyrics. I don't know what the last one is.
No,
but you get the sentiment. Yeah, I mean, I guess what, because the record does sound so happy and lush,
mm-hmm.
it's easy to gloss over the sense of apocalypse in the record, like mm-hmm. what Traffic Fiction is, and All Things Right, and Two for the Show. It is kind of talking about the apocalypse, that the famed apocalypse that people like to, you know, pontificate on. But yeah, I wanted it to be fun though when I'm talking about these subjects. I don't want to scare people. And also, I made a decision with myself not too long ago that basically just says fuck it. You know, I'm not going to let this the fear of this. Because once they scare you with the fear, then they've already won the first
yes.
war, you know. So the record sounds happy because it's kind of celebrating your humanity in the face of whatever looming threat there is in the future.
Day to day, are you able to keep that courage? I'm asking because I, like, feel that surveillance and the violence, like, so close to my skin all the time that I feel sometimes like scared when I go out. And I was thinking about your song By the Jasmine, where it's again about like being sort of alien out mm-hmm. in the world
mm-hmm.
and the fear that comes with that. Like it
yeah.
absolutely works on the album as you as a person. How do you hold on to that like fuck it wild self-assurance
yeah.
maybe or optimism or whatever it is?
It's difficult, you know. It's hard for a lot of people. My mind, it pisses me off, drives me mad, because it likes to, when it hears problems, it likes to take it, no matter how far they are, and bring it to me and try and fix it, like work through it with me. This is how we can fix this, you know. And there is mm-hmm. no solutions to a lot of things, and that's okay. My therapist actually told me something really cool the other day when I was talking about this. He used the analogy of a tornado, right? And I guess this kind of sums up how I'm able to, you know, stay a little mm-hmm. grounded now. It's like, you know, in Nashville, we got these tornadoes, right? And, you know, when there's a warning, when there's a tornado warning, what do? We shelter in place because here's a, you know, possible threat. But if there's a tornado, say, in Nebraska, you don't have to shelter in place. It's of no threat to you. It's so far away. You know, you could so you don't have to get into danger mode or shelter
yeah.
mode. It's over there, you know. So I guess you could make the argument that, you know, what you're talking about is permeating through our daily lives all the time, constantly. But I guess the point is it's not in front of you right now. It's Lizzie No in front of me now, not that stuff. So just look at what's in front of you.
Huh. Yeah, be in the moment.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
It sounds easy enough. Yeah, I ain't got no answers. I'm not going to pretend like I do. I'm just as scared as anyone else. But, you know, it's, I guess it's just keeping like a punk attitude. Just kind of like, fuck it, let's party. You know?
Yeah. Right under the satellite's eye. So, Yo Face, when you're performing this album live, where is that going in the set?
Oh, that's a good question.
What's the moment? What's the moment going to be like when you're playing that live?
I think maybe the last song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good, it leaves you on this, my friend said the song sounds like the color of sunlight, like what the color of what the sun looks like. So I feel like it's a good place to leave people off. In a set and on a record for Yo Face. That song started out as a joke. That was like, I wrote that song a couple years ago. And I was just kind of like trying to put on my stoner Frank Sinatra, you know,
yes.
type vibe, learning what the keyboard does.
Wait, did Frank Sinatra smoke weed? Was that a thing for him?
Frank Sinatra, yeah, he did. He did all that stuff. Yeah, he was a, I don't want to rat on him, but.
No. I think that the statute of limitations is up. I knew he was like a wild character, but it never occurred to me that he was like a stoner.
Yeah, I don't
you
think
know what I mean? You don't really think of him that way, yeah. But it's kind of a fun
thought
experiment.
No, that was me. It's just, yeah.
Okay, Traffic Fiction, it's a work of genius.
Thank you.
Don't be scared. Everyone go buy it. It's so good. It's so good. Trey, will you do a lightning round?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, what's your favorite animal?
Killer whale.
Who is a poet you think everybody should read?
James Baldwin or Cormac McCarthy.
What is the most fun city in which to have a day off on tour?
New York.
I know that's right.
Mm-hmm.
What is your must-have tour van snack?
Jesus.
Ooh, what is the best time of day to write a song?
Middle of the night.
What is your deepest fear at the moment?
Oh, I talked plenty about it.
You've already really covered that.
Yeah.
What is your most trusted news outlet?
Oh, damn. None of it.
None of them. Nice.
None of them. No.
Who is your favorite pop artist currently working today?
I like that Olivia Rodrigo or Rodriguez song or whatever.
It's mm-hmm.
a lot. That's a good pop song.
She's fun. If you could go on a cross-country road trip with anybody living, dead, or imaginary, who would you choose?
Salvador Dali.
Nice. Oh, yeah. That's a great answer.
Yeah. We were born on the same day. Yeah, we're both May 11th babies.
Wow, that's a powerful birthday twin.
Uh-huh.
I was born on the same day as Drake.
Oh, tight. I can see it. You got that. Both got that, like, red bone type.
Yeah. Light-skinned, ne'er-do-well Scorpios with enormous egos.
Uh-huh.
If you were not a musician, what would you do for a job?
I don't know. I feel like I would do something with animals. Like a monkey trainer or something.
No, don't be a monkey trainer.
I love
that's
monkeys.
Animal cruelty.
Oh, I would just, you know, monkey research.
Go work at a preserve.
There you go. Yeah. I would just feed monkeys.
There's this place in, I think, Democratic Republic of Congo called Lola Ya Bonobo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving them a shout out because it means paradise for bonobos. And so these orphaned bonobos can come there. And they have these ladies that work there full time to serve as like the surrogate moms for the bonobos because they can die of loneliness.
Wow.
So they hug them and just like hang out with them.
Yeah.
That could be you.
It's a lot of pressure. Because if I don't hug a bonobo, then I can die. That's a little too much pressure for me, but I would love to hang out with Bonobo. I don't know about being his mom or nothing. Anyways, okay. What's the next?
You're ready for a moderate commitment to the Bonobos. Okay.
Yeah.
Final question. What is your biggest pet peeve?
Someone was doing this thing the other day that just really hurt. They were like chewing on the phone, you know?
Oh.
I don't know. I can't handle it. I hate it. I hate that sound over the phone.
Oh, yeah. In their mouth. Yeah.
In my ear, just while they're talking. I would say that's
too intimate.
Yeah.
That's too intimate.
I don't want that in my brain.
Don't do it.
No.
Trey Burt, thank you so much for coming back to Basic Folk.
Thanks for having me.
The new album is fantastic.
Thank you.
Everybody go see him on tour.
Yeah.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by John Nungesser. Our music composed by Alex Stanton. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. You can check out our website, basicfolk.com, or you can listen wherever you get podcasts.
If you like this episode, make sure to share it with a friend. You could also share it with somebody that you met at a professional conference who handed you their card and asked you to reach out and make contact with them, but you don't really know what to say because like you just super briefly met and you maybe forgot who they were by the time you took out the card and acted on it. This would be a great intro to them. You could be like, hey, I'm so-and-so. Here's what I do for work. Great to be connected with you. Anyway, here's a wonderful interview with folk artist Trey Burt.
Well, that's great, Lizzie. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.